Governor Janet Mills on the weeks ahead. We're hearing it everywhere now, the phrase light at the end of the tunnel. As more and more people are vaccinated against COVID-19, people are beginning to think about life getting back to some version of normal. Earlier this month, Governor Janet Mills laid out a plan to reopen Maine in hopes that the economy will rebound as tourism season gets underway. And now she is rewriting her proposed budget to reflect an influx of money from the American Rescue Act. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with Governor Mills about what she foresees as Maine turns the corner into spring and beyond. And she'll answer your questions about the pandemic response, the state budget, and more. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Joining me today, the Governor of Maine, Janet Mills, to talk about the state's COVID response, the state budget, the summer tourism season, and more. Governor Mills, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Jennifer, thank you for having me.
And we invite your comments and questions. What have you been wanting to ask the governor? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Governor Mills, I want to start with the general feeling that I think people have right now, a feeling of hopefulness. There's more and more people are getting the vaccinations, and let's face it, as the days get longer and we have some warm days, I think a lot of people are feeling like, oh, finally, we're coming to the end of this pandemic. But Maine's average two-week infection rates are creeping up again. Are you worried that people are letting down their guard and not being careful enough?
It's a constant concern. And while, frankly, there's a lot of relief in the air, a lot of joy, especially as the season starts to turn around, we thought it was going to turn around last week. And I've toured both the Bangor facility and Cross Center, Cross Insurance Center in Bangor, and the Maine Health facility in Scarborough, old Scarborough Downs. And I have been vaccinated myself twice, and it's been more than 2 weeks, so I can tell you there is a great feeling of relief when you get vaccinated. And I would encourage anyone who has any doubt about it to please, and if you're eligible, please make an appointment and get vaccinated. It's so important, and it's important to also, as Dr. Shaw keeps saying, keep those measures in place that protect all of us, whether you're vaccinated or not. Keep your distance, avoid large gatherings, and wear the mask. It's a simple measure. It protects you, me, and everyone. And what I worry about is seeing the news about spring break in Fort Lauderdale and parties in Texas where they're just having mass gatherings with no precautions at all. And I just think that's a very, very risky, it's very dangerous, very risky behavior right now. So hopefully that won't catch on in Maine. It's not quite warm enough to go to the beach anyway. But, yeah, we are concerned. And I'm concerned about any kind of any level of vaccine hesitancy, especially among healthcare workers and staff at long-term care facilities and nursing homes who may be thinking they don't need to get vaccinated, but it's always helpful, and it's helpful to the ones you're caring for, too. We want to be able to reopen nursing homes and long-term care facilities for visitation, something that's it's happening, but we want to be safe in doing that. People living in long-term care facilities and nursing homes deserve to have visits from their children and grandchildren and neighbors and friends, and it's really such a hardship for them to have been so isolated so long. So getting everyone vaccinated helps with that as well.
2 weeks ago, you gave your State of the Budget address, and you were basing that on revenue predictions at the time. And then last week, President Biden signed the American Rescue Act, which I'm guessing changes everything. So Maine receives billions, stands to receive billions of dollars in aid. Congresswoman Pingree's office estimates the number just for state and local government here could be at least $1.2 billion and as much as $1.7 billion. How will this reshape your budget proposal?
Oh, good question. And I don't have an easy answer because the details have yet to come forth. And I'm not sure it'll be that large an amount going directly to the state, but a lot of money will be coming into the state. Just the increase in the child tax credit for every person with a child up to a certain income to get $3,600 for a child under six, and to have that paid in advance on a monthly basis, increasing the earned income tax credit for 17 million workers nationwide by as much as $1,000. That, too, is a big boon to people, especially low-wage workers who bore the brunt of the crisis, economic crisis last year and this year still. Frontline food preparers and servers and cashiers and hospitality workers, home health aides, they're going to get the benefit of that. And expanding child care assistance and cutting child care costs, getting a refundable tax credit as much as half of their child care expenses. So that's a big boon for working families of Maine everywhere. Increases in the cash assistance called TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families. Lowering health insurance premiums for lower and middle-income families. These are all things that will help Maine people all across the state. In addition, there's money for education. And in particular, I know that people have questions about our students and how well they're doing. Have we lost too many students through, you know, academically? A lot of the federal money is going to come down the pike for adjusting to five-day in-person school weeks and for summer programs that might help us, we hope, get students back in the classroom, even outside the classroom, experiential learning. We don't want to lose kids. And summer and extended learning programs are very valuable, and I'm looking forward to seeing how schools, how local districts decide to use the money they're going to be getting through the American Rescue Plan to help students recover their academic standings. I think our students on the whole are doing pretty well, but we know every time I talk to a teacher anywhere, they say they commiserate that they have lost some students, that they can't connect with certain students anymore, and that they worry about them socially and academically.
I know you said you're still hearing the details. Do you have a sense, though, of when you'll be able to submit a new budget to the legislature? After all, the legislature's in session now talking about these issues.
Well, yeah, the other thing is I'm told from the news and the reports I get from Congress that the Treasury Secretary may decide to withhold half of the benefits that are directed to the states and local governments, may decide to withhold half of those benefits for a year, up to a year. So it's really pretty hard to tell how much the state may be getting and what the restrictions may be. We'll have to wait to see what the regulations and guidelines are that come out of the Department of Treasury. I mean, for instance, there were something like 80 amendments on the floor of the Senate a week ago yesterday. So, and those amendments changed a great deal about what states can do with the money that they receive directly. I see the state as a conduit for economic development, a conduit for funds that come to us through us to elevate the lives and livelihoods of Maine people. I'm hoping we can do some serious economic development with those funds. I'm hoping we can extend the use of those monies for the benefit of the most people across the state of Maine. There are a lot of things we can do, for instance, in food processing and broadband. There's a significant amount of money, separate bundle of money in the rescue plan for broadband. I want to make sure that we do this wisely in a private-public partnership format, that we expand broadband as much as possible across the state as effectively as possible. It's something that everybody knows was highlighted during the pandemic. Lack of telehealth, lack of teleeducation. One reason that we went and raised money through philanthropy and from the use of other previous federal monies to give kids internet access through contracts, service contracts, through devices, et cetera, to make sure they could stay online and stay connected to their schools. So there's a lot of creative things we can do. Doing a new budget at this time of the year is going to be a challenge. And I look forward to the help of the legislature and the Appropriations Committee in digesting the American Rescue Plan and determining what we can do, how we can best serve the people of Maine.
All right. And you mentioned broadband. I wanted to ask you about that. Senator King's office says that he believes Maine will receive $100 million to expand broadband. How will that happen? How will that money be spent?
Great question. Question of the hour. You know, unfortunately, we can't just write a check and say, here, you've got broadband. There are different forms of internet access that work in different parts of the state. The first thing I want to do is accurately and effectively map the state of Maine. It'll take a little while, but we don't have accurate mapping of who's got what now. The federal government has not done a good job of mapping our state or other states to determine who's most lacking in high-speed internet access. What they do sometimes is find one home or business in one geographical area, one census block, for instance, to say that entity has 100 down, 25 up, or whatever, and that's. Or they might just say DSL is sufficient for a neighborhood. Well, DSL is no longer sufficient. We want accurate mapping so we can target the best use of our resources as quickly as possible to those areas. Some people think satellite is an answer. My understanding is satellite is extraordinarily expensive, and it's kind of unique, and it's not necessarily reliable. Fiber seems to be the way to go for most neighborhoods, most homes and businesses. We want to make sure that people can operate remotely, can work remotely, not necessarily up in the North Maine woods, but some in every significant neighborhood in Maine. We're hearing it all over the state.
Do you believe that $100 million is enough to connect, pretty much everybody except those living out in the North Maine woods?
Oh, it's hard to tell. You know, some people say we need $1 billion to do broadband effectively. But I'm also concerned about not just getting the infrastructure out there, not just laying fiber or whatever it takes, but also dealing with the monthly fees that people may be asked to pay, dealing with the pole attachment fees and the monthly fees. I really think we need a stronger public-private partnership to determine how those fees should be set. Because not everybody in Maine can afford $100 a month or $80 a month for broadband. Working families will find it hard to afford that. And we want to make sure that every family has sufficient access so that mom and dad can work online and junior can attend school online, and the other members of the family can all be online at the same time, performing what it is they do in their lives.
Governor Mills, Maine is doing well compared to most other states on vaccination rates, but there is disparity from county to county. What are you doing to address that, to ensure that people in Piscataquis County, for example, are being vaccinated at the same rate as Cumberland County?
We actually have increased doses going to Piscataquis County right now because there's been an outbreak there, and it's very concerning. So the Maine CDC, headed by Dr. Nirav Shah, looks at the data every week and more often, actually, to determine where the cases are increasing, to determine where there may be wait lists for vaccinations, to determine where there is staffing for vaccinations, which is a critical factor in getting doses into arms as fast as possible. So staffing varies from place to place. We've got over 200 vaccination sites now all across the state of Maine. But you can imagine how ambitious a thing this is. It is the most difficult logistical challenge we've ever faced, getting vaccinations in the state of Maine and elsewhere across the country.
Governor Mills, tell me more about the outbreak in Piscataquis County. What can you tell us about that?
I can't give you details about the outbreak in Piscataquis County, but I think Dr. Shah has addressed that in one of his recent press conferences, and he'll have more to say about that, I think, tomorrow at his press conference.
Okay. Let me ask you about reopening. I know people are really expecting this to be a big summer tourism season. We're already seeing hotels booking up.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, are we ready to do this safely? In a usual year, it's difficult to get enough seasonal workers. If Maine starts setting records this summer, what is that going to look like?
Yeah, you know, I've been talking to members of the tourism industry, Tourism Association, and hospitality folks, and businesses across the state. Workforce is a challenge, even though we have a still relatively high unemployment rate relative to a year ago. But workforce housing is a real challenge, and I want to see if we can use some of that federal money with the help of the legislature in standing up workforce housing in places across the state where it should be more available. We also don't know whether the federal programs, the J-1 program, the work visa programs will be available because of the travel restrictions federally due to COVID. And so it's going to be interesting. I'm glad that people are making reservations. I want to see weddings happen in Maine again. I want to see conferences, in, at least in a small way, at least start up again. The other thing we don't know about, two things we don't know about, are cruise ships, whether cruise ships will be docking in Maine. You know, Canada has banned them for now, prohibited them for now. And the Canadian border. We don't know whether or not the Canadian border will be opened up again. I know Senator Collins has written a letter asking that be examined promptly, and I would agree it should be examined promptly. We just don't know. Canada has not had the high rate of vaccinations that we have had across the country. They're using different vaccines. I think they're relying on AstraZeneca. They don't have as high a rate of vaccinations as we do, so we have to watch their case counts and hospitalization rates, that kind of thing. But that's up to the federal government. So that also impacts Maine tourism industry and the hospitality industry, because something like 17% of our overnight visitors during the summer are Canadian visitors, ordinarily. Obviously, that wasn't the case last year. But we hope we'll be able to reopen the border to some extent. There was a good article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend about the border at Madawaska and how people aren't able to visit their own family and friends just across the border between Madawaska and Edmundston.
Governor Mills, your reopening plan expands the capacities for both indoor and outdoor events, but still mandates masks and social distancing. Leading music venues say they're just not going to be able to break even if people still have to stay 6 feet apart, even at outdoor events. When do you foresee performing arts, music, getting back to a place where we can have concerts again?
Well, actually, my son-in-law is in that business. He is a music agent, and he was showing me over the weekend remotely. He was showing me a plan that a venue in another state has for allowing higher capacity audiences for outdoor concert venues, and how they're keeping people safely distanced. And that's not in Maine, but I think people are going to be able to do that in Maine, keeping people in the same household together, but separate from other households. It's just going to have to happen for now. I think lifting the indoor capacity to 50% starting March 26th and 75% on May 24th before Memorial Day is a big advantage. And the outdoor gatherings going to 100% starting May 24th will be a big help. People are wary. I don't want to see Maine become Fort Lauderdale's spring break. And the last thing we want to have happen for the sake of our economy, among other things, is for there to be a super spreader event in Maine. And that's the thing businesses are keenly aware of as well. And the businesses who run concerts and theater venues are also aware of that. We got to turn things around last summer to some extent by being one of the best states in the nation in terms of our case rates, hospitalization rates, and death rates. And we were branded, I think, appropriately as one of the safest states in the nation. We have lowest crime rates. We have lowest case rates and that kind of thing. And so people felt safe coming here. And that's very important, not just for our tourists, our visitors, but for the staff of these venues, for the employees, and for the general public in Maine.
We are speaking with Maine's Governor, Janet Mills. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Unitil, committed to supporting Maine students and teachers and proud to sponsor PBS Learning Media. Learn more at unitil.com. And Ocean View at Falmouth, with the goal of promoting optimal health through active retirement living. OceanViewRC.com.
During the pandemic, more Americans with drug addiction are turning up at hospital emergency rooms desperate for help.
The overdose patients that come into an emergency room, they're at their most vulnerable. You know, they've been dead or near dead and brought back to life.
But many hospitals are not prepared. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. A year into the coronavirus pandemic, and Mainers are more hopeful as vaccine rollouts continue. But the state is faced with deep fault lines that have appeared, a lack of access to information and care, ongoing separation of families and friends, and jobs that have changed or even disappeared altogether. This week, Maine Public's Deep Dive takes a look at the one-year anniversary of the pandemic, what lessons have been learned, and how life has changed. Find out more at mainepublic.org/coronavirus.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Maine Governor Janet Mills. You can share your comments or questions with a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And we will start with a call. We'll go to Ava, who is calling from York. Hi, Ava. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much. First, I wanted to say to Governor Mills, we all appreciate, my friends and family, all that you've done, because it is a difficult situation, never been seen before. And although we're all trying to breathe and look forward and be positive, my question comes, being in a southern tier, we have seen such an influx, not only daily but weekend visitors. Of course, we can't discern if they live here part-time or not, but people who live here full-time. Mm-hmm. And we were just wondering when everything ramps up again, and it seems like it will be very busy, how's it going to look to still be compliant? So local residents who know each other are very cautious and careful. But those we don't know sometimes are just doing whatever they want to do on, let's say, a public walkway. It just seems to be that people are talking about that. And then I had one question about the vaccine after that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ava. Thanks for the question. You know, I think what we did last year, we'll try to do again this year, perhaps with local and state, the money coming down the pike from the federal government. And that is to use local, not compliance, but education help. People, for instance, on some of the beaches in southern Maine last year, we had beach ambassadors who would go around the beaches and remind people of the various precautions in place and the public health protocols, and then also checking stores and restaurants and the like, and reminding people of the precautions. And we want to have a partnership with local officials as well, same as we did last year. I think that would be beneficial. And I think it worked, and particularly when we focused on so-called resort towns, everything from Ogunquit and Kennebunkport to Bar Harbor and Greenville and Rangeley. There were people and there were messaging. It was locally done efforts to message. For instance, Bangor had a public relations effort, Mask Up For Me, which I thought was pretty effective. And we hope to do that kind of thing this summer, too. It's, you know, it's going to be a tough task, a tough challenge. But I think we're up to it with the help of local people like yourself.
Yeah, and even if you can be quick with your follow-up question, please.
Yep, it was just, I'm supposed to be in Florida on the East Coast near Fort Lauderdale with family, which evidently I'm not there because I canceled. And that segues to my next situation because I didn't get a vaccine. I'm just over 60. I'm in line waiting. It's been almost 2 weeks since you put forth the edict for Wednesday the 3rd. I've not gotten a call, so I was just curious what you see as the timeline of how long that would be to receive a call, and if not, how the pharmacies are going to be having their own private situation.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I know that question is on a lot of people's minds. As a matter of fact, we have now vaccinated 55% of all those people, all people 60 years old and up and over, 60 years old and up. 98% of those of an older age, we're getting it done as fast as possible. As I said, we've got about over 200, I think, vaccination sites now all across the state. The main impediment right now is simply supply, making sure that the venues are staffed up, and the federal government supplies the pharmacies directly, and they're now focused by presidential directive on teachers and school staff particularly. But supply in general, I had a conversation with the president of Pfizer just 2 weeks ago, and he has committed to another 200 million doses by the end of May and 300 million total by the end of June or July, anyway, this summer. So I was very confident, and I'm confident from what President Biden has said as well, that our supply of vaccines will increase over the next few weeks and months so that we will be able to get you in and vaccinate you and everyone else who wants to be vaccinated in the state of Maine.
Thanks, Ava, for your question. An email here from Ty. I've read that there is money allocated for property taxes. Given that I've been employed since October 25th, I'm wondering what the guidelines would be for relief should I qualify. I live alone and there is no other income.
Property taxes. I have not heard of any part of the federal program that would affect property taxes. So that would be news to me. We'll keep looking at the rescue plan. Haven't seen that. There have been efforts at the state level before to relieve the burden of property taxes. And that's in part why we put a lot more money towards education this year in the biennial budget. We increase general purpose aid to education by a large amount in order to help the towns bring down the property taxes, the mill rate, and such. The legislature 2 years ago enhanced some of the property tax relief programs. That was a couple of years ago.
All right. We'll go to John calling from Farmingdale. Hi, John. Go ahead. John in Farmingdale. Go ahead. Okay, we'll move on, though. We'll go to Courtney in Portland. Hi, Courtney. Go ahead.
Hi, and Governor Mills, thank you for all that you're doing for the people of Maine. I've been a COVID critical care nurse since the beginning here, so it's been a long year. And not only been a long year for us, but, you know, our loved ones at home, our husbands and wives. And I just wanted to ask about, you know, since this research shows that we can still transmit the virus as vaccinated people, other states have been kind of implementing our loved ones in our home as, you know, within this high-risk category to get vaccinated. So I just wanted to, you know, ask about that and advocating for our loved ones with you and Dr. Shaw.
Thanks. Thanks for the question, Courtney. As you know, we have focused primarily on age brackets because 98% of the deaths that have occurred in Maine and elsewhere are of people 50 years and over, 50 years and up. And we made this analysis, Dr. Shaw and Commissioner Lambrew and I and others, we did this analysis, a deep dive into the statistics. And it's not just about statistics. It's about getting the most people vaccinated as quickly as possible and not just reducing the risk of contracting COVID or the risk to exposure to the public, but the risk of serious illness, the risk of death. And, you know, my heart goes out to people who, like yourself, who treat individuals with COVID in the ICUs and the emergency rooms across the state. You've done an incredible job in terms of expanding it beyond healthcare and the age groups right now and then school staff. I am very hopeful that we will get everybody in Maine vaccinated by the end of May, or at least made eligible and shots in arms. That everyone who is desirous of being vaccinated will be vaccinated, depending, of course, exclusively on the influx of supply, the increase in supply of doses. But we have right now tailored the vaccination program to the age groups indicated because they're at higher risk of death and or serious illness, and because we can get more people vaccinated more quickly, which helps everybody in the communities, everybody across the state of Maine, when more people are vaccinated. So we don't have to stop and ask about eligibility. Are you in a certain profession, or are you exposed a certain way? Age is a pretty quick thing to verify.
Courtney, thank you for your call, and thank you for the work that you do. I see that John in Farmingdale has called back. John, are you there now?
I am back. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Thanks so much for taking the time today, Governor. It's always a pleasure again to meet you, and I appreciate the opportunity. So I have a quick comment and a question in regards to the referendum question on the NECEC corridor that we will be voting on. So I have heard you in the past frame the debate kind of between fossil fuel and the renewable energy sectors, and I simply don't believe that it's a real fair or accurate characterization on the debate that we're having on that here in Maine. Of course, Massachusetts is going to get a renewable energy portfolio from somewhere, and it has several avenues for doing that, you know, separate from the corridor. To me, what this debate is really about, you know, for many of us is whether or not, you know, the extent of the $250 million.
John, do you have a question for the governor? We have dozens of calls coming in. Yeah.
Yes.
My question is, in fact, you know, God willing, the referendum passes, you know, would you be willing to support whatever legislation comes out of it, or do you plan to veto that? Thank you.
Well, John, thanks. That is that's very speculative. I have not analyzed the referendum question. I do know that I took a deep dive into this issue as soon as I got elected. I realized I had a lot of questions about NECEC, knowing as little about it as I did at the time, everyone did. And I got into it very deeply and analyzed the issue, and also began negotiating, not only with CMP at the time, but later with Hydro-Québec. I wanted to make sure that we had the best bang for the buck for Maine people. And among other things, I negotiated with the head of Hydro-Québec for electricity to come into Maine from that line, enough, something like 500 megawatt hours each year for 20 years, enough to power approximately 75,000 Maine homes each year at a discounted rate. That's a benefit to Maine people. I mean, I could spend hours talking about the other benefits, about the scholarships that are going to be available to Franklin and Somerset County students, about the $10 million in broadband for middle mile and last mile extensions off the line, off the fiber that's going to be developed along the line all the way to Wiscasset. I could talk to you about the money for electric vehicles and power stations. But it's not just about the money to Maine people or about the benefits that we've negotiated, $258 million in benefits. It's also about, yes, taking back our state and backing off of the $5 billion a year Maine people spend on gas and oil. We have the highest dependency on oil for heating source, home heating source of any state in the country. I am all for challenging climate change, and it's high on my agenda. And one way to do that is to look at hydropower. I'm very familiar with the fact that, you know, a lot of the gas companies, the fossil fuel companies, are very adamantly opposed to this line. And you have to step back and ask yourself, who will benefit if the line does not go through? Whose bottom line will be harmed if the line does go through? And I think I know the answer to that. Thank you for the question, John.
All right, we're going to go to Ethan, who is calling from Saco. Hi, Ethan. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Ethan.
Hi, Jan. How you doing?
Good.
I don't want to criticize you at all today because I don't want to go there. I know you've taken a lot of flack, but it can't be easy what we're going through. But I told your screener I want to talk about the lockdowns being possibly more harmful than the virus and government's role in the time of COVID, where we're constantly reminded of the pandemic and a survival rate of near 100%. We're having lockdowns.
A survival rate of 100%?
Near 100%, 99.9.
So the 725 people who died of COVID in Maine, we shouldn't count them? I'm not sure where you're going with that.
Well, you have 30 people dying every day, and so you have thousands of people dying.
So, Ethan, what I said to the last caller, we have so many calls coming in. Could you quickly ask your question?
My point is, what is the role of government if not telling the truth, fixing roads and bridges? Are we going to see no end to the authoritarian style government?
Ethan, we're fixing roads and bridges as we speak. I never stopped manufacturing. We never stopped construction. Our building trades are burgeoning. We've never stopped the economy. There is no lockdown going on right now, Ethan. I'm not sure where you get your information. There's nothing locked down. And I think we've done a really pretty good job, all things considered. The 725 deaths I referred to are not trivial, but our statistics are better than almost any other state in case count, hospitalizations, and death rates. And we have stuck together as a community and as a state to keep those numbers down, to make Maine state safe, so that we didn't have to lock down completely like Vermont and other states have done. We've kept it open as we could, and our statistics are showing Maine has the best economic recovery prospects of any state in New England, and we're going to keep on that track.
We do need to go to another break. When we come back, more of your questions for Maine's Governor, Janet Mills. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from CEI, helping Maine's small business owners navigate challenging times. Learn more at ceimaine.org. And Sweetser, reminding you to call the statewide mental health crisis line at 888-568-1112 or visit sweetser.org for support.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Awards season is here. We'll have the latest from the weekend Grammy Awards ceremony, plus the nominees for the Oscars are announced. That, and when can you expect to get your money from the latest round of COVID relief? Next time on Here and Now.
And you can hear that in just a bit after Maine Calling at 12 noon here on Maine Public Radio. The PBS NewsHour on Maine Public Television provides in-depth news and analysis of the issues that matter to you. It can be seen weekday evenings at 6, 7, and 11. The NewsHour brings you the top stories objectively examined and discussed in-depth with differing viewpoints. It's television news you can trust, helping make sense of our complicated and ever-changing world. The PBS NewsHour at 6, 7, and 11, weeknights on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are speaking with Maine's 75th governor, Janet Mills. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. An email from Jay. Today is Maine's 201st birthday. Bicentennial commemorations were understandably canceled last year. Does the state have a systematic plan as to when the events might occur in 2021?
Oh, geez. I was thinking about that this morning when I read Heather Cox Richardson's excellent, excellent blog about the history of Maine statehood and how enormously involved the Washburn family were with Abraham Lincoln and the Missouri Compromise and Elijah Lovejoy being murdered for his views on abolition. And we have a very moving history, a very interesting history, and I do want to commemorate it, celebrate it, and enjoy it as things do open up. The Bicentennial Commission, headed by Senator Bill Diamond, is working on that right now. I don't know that we're going to have a big parade. We were planning one last year, but it couldn't happen. I don't think we're going to have a big parade this year, but I know they've got a lot of other kinds of commemorations and competitions for among school children, school groups for commemorative essays, and they're doing a sort of a memory bank. They're doing a selection of it's like a time capsule thing that'll be kept up. All kinds of things, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it from them.
Okay. I'm going to go to Vinny calling from Brownfield. Hi, Vinny. Go ahead.
Yes, a quick question. Thanks, everybody, for everything for last year that was done. But I was wondering if there's any plan or formula on opening up the late summer agricultural fairs and festivals, and in what possible capacity?
Yes, I was just reading a report this morning. You know, I get reports from my departments, and the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry is working with the fair associations. I'm very hopeful of opening up some fairs over the late summer, early fall. I always go to the Farmington Fair is one of my favorites, and the Freiburg Fair, and of course the Common Ground Fair, which are around the same time. I hope to see them reopen this year, but they're working on logistics, how to do that, how to do it safely. So I can't say for sure, but, you know, we're looking forward to that. Jennifer, if I can just go back 1 minute, talk about Piscataquis County, because I used the term outbreak, and I probably shouldn't have used that term, but the cases are increasing in Piscataquis County. They're up to like 5 a day new cases in the last couple of weeks, and that's quite an increase over the previous couple of weeks. So I just wanted to correct myself and be accurate there. And we are sending more testing equipment to testing supplies to Piscataquis County to make sure that there isn't a real outbreak.
Vinny, thanks for your question. Let's see. We will go to Amber calling from Portland. Hi, Amber. Go ahead.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. My question is, in light of the strong evidence of lack of transmission in schools, when will our education be prioritized, not only to get the kids back in school, but also to catch them up to where they should be, to avoid being disadvantaged compared to other states and especially other countries?
Well, we are at an advantage, not a disadvantage, compared to most other states. In fact, our schools, more than half of the elementary schools in Maine have stayed open 5 days a week. And most of them have stayed open, and more than that have stayed open at least a couple days a week. High school is a different story. Many of them have stayed open 1 or 2 days a week. But we are anxious to use the federal money that is coming down the pike for education to extend summer learning, to pay teachers and learning facilitators to get caught up, help students get caught up over the summer so that we don't fall behind. And I'm anxious to see the testing scores that come out of this past year. My, I worry about the in-classroom students who are missing their social interactions and school sports, and we're reopening school sports soon, too, with the help of the Maine Principals Association. But special ed is a special challenge, you know, not having that one-on-one as much as we had it before. But we're going to be working with the school districts. It's a local, as you know, local control issue, how each school district manages its money and manages their reopening plans. And when I say reopening, I mean in classroom. Classrooms closed, but not schools. And even then, classrooms didn't close across the state of Maine. But we developed a plan for two things. One, training learning facilitators with the help of the community colleges. We've trained several hundred community learning facilitators to be in the classroom if the teacher can't be in there. And we stood up a program for after-school child care last fall, hoping to expand that, looking to make the wisest use of these federal funds coming down the pike to get kids back in school, back in the classroom, even if it's an outdoor classroom. You know, nothing wrong with experiential learning over the summer.
Amber, thanks for your question. We're going to move on to the Naples area and Joanne. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Good morning to you both. Governor Mills, I am grateful for all the work that you and Dr. Shah are doing. I'm a 70-plus registered nurse, obviously not working clinically right now. I have been doing everything I can do in terms of what I'm calling 12 months of house arrest, just double masking when I drive through to get groceries, pick up. But my question is, I registered in January, mid-January, with MaineHealth, Northern Light Mercy, for the vaccine. I have back. I call every week, and I'm getting automated responses saying you're on a wait list. Now, I agree with you, and I'm so glad to see teachers and workers are now in the first tier. I think they should have been there right from the beginning. I think that's terrific. Mm-hmm. I was hopeful when I saw Walgreens and Hannaford and Wyndham come on board. I'm in the Naples area. There's nothing locally here. Bridgeton Hospital has not had anything available. So going forward, I've been checking every other day at Walgreens via their app, and they say, well, five more days. Today I went online, and it gives you two questions that change the format. Are you a Maine resident? Yes. Are you a teacher or child care worker?
Joanne, no. Joanne, can I answer? I think I know what your question is.
Sure, it's president, not eligible.
Yeah, the president has directed that the pharmacy programs be focused on teaching and school staff at this time, and that is probably why you're not able to get into Walgreens. So Northern Light and MaineHealth would be a better bet. You can try the community vaccination line at 1-888-445-4111. That's 1-888-445-4111. I know a lot of people are having the problems you're having, and I'm very sympathetic to it. I'm hoping that you will be able to get vaccinated as quickly as possible. I'm sorry for the delay that you've encountered.
Joanne, good luck to you. An email here from Robin. Robin heard on the BBC this morning about a third wave of the virus hitting Europe. Is the governor factoring that into conversations with healthcare professionals?
Well, certainly we're looking at the wave in Europe, and we're looking at the variants in particular, keeping an eye on them. And as we said before, this is right now, it's a race between vaccination and the variants. And we hope to win that race by vaccinating as many people as possible as quickly as possible.
All right. We're going to go to Bill calling from Raymond. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. It's kind of a two-part question. First of all, I've seen on the news as well as messages on television about if you've had COVID, you are still eligible to have the vaccination, and they recommend that you do go and get the vaccination. I've had some friends that have gone in and who've had COVID, and when they get, even after they've registered and got their date to go ahead and get vaccinated, they've been turned away. And the second part of my question was the same thing. I'm having a very difficult time trying to find out where and when to go get vaccinated.
Got it. Bill, I don't know your particular circumstances, but again, I would call the community vaccination line at 1-888-445-4111. I can't tell you the answer to whether or not somebody who's had COVID would not be eligible for vaccination. My understanding was that they would be, but I'll ask Dr. Shah if he's heard anything new along those lines.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for your call. I also haven't heard that. We are speaking with Governor Janet Mills on Maine Calling today. Let's see, we're going to go to Todd in Brownfield. Hi, Todd, go ahead.
Can I just back up one second?
Yeah, sure. Hold on just a second, Todd.
The answer to Bill's question, I'm just thinking, may also depend on how recently the person recovered from COVID. I know there's some time frames involved in that. It's obviously a medical question, but if I remember right, depends on how long it's been since you recovered from COVID.
Okay, go ahead, Todd.
Sorry. Yeah.
So, hi, Janet. It's great to talk to you. I have a question about the CMP corridor. I moved to the state because I love all the natural resources that we have here. I'm a very avid hunter. I love hunting ducks specifically. And I know that corridor, right where they're putting that, is going to be bulldozing about 11 designated mallard nesting grounds, and I don't know, is you know, I feel like Maine has so many other resources for renewable energy, which I'm totally on board with. And I'm wondering if you thought about trying to invest in Maine.
Okay, Todd, thank you. Go ahead, Governor Mills.
Well, thank you. The question, I think I would refer him to the 300-page report from the Department of Environmental Protection, which issued the permit to the NECEC and that examined all of the potential wildlife impacts. And they actually also narrowed the width of the line down to 54 feet. So it's not the New Jersey Turnpike. It's a pretty narrow space of land. And they did look at all the impacts. And it, part of the requirements of the permit are for the developers to set aside 40,000 acres elsewhere for conservation and preservation. And that's going to be a big boon to the state of Maine. And those acres should include a lot of deer wintering areas and the wildlife preservation areas.
Todd, thanks for your question. Myra wants you, Governor Mills, to tell Dr. Shaw that he deserves an award and that he deserves a year's paid vacation.
We can't afford to lose him for a year. No, Myra.
And I will mention that Dr. Shaw will be on the program next Monday. Also, you mentioned historian Heather Cox Richardson a minute ago, and she's going to be on Maine Calling a week from Friday.
She's great.
And Governor Mills, really, we have about a minute and a half left in the program, and I just wanted to ask you if you have a message for Maine people as we turn the corner. It's spring next week. What do you want people to be thinking about right now?
I want them to be thinking about what we've learned from this pandemic, what we've learned during the pandemic, partly because of the pandemic. I want them to know that, as Nirav said last week on the press briefing, Maine has come together at its core rather than coming apart at its seams. We have stuck together. We have been one state, one community. And I think about the letters, the thousands of letters and cards I've gotten from people across the state of Maine, and from little kids especially. And I got one a while ago from an 11-year-old girl named Savannah. And she said, Dear Mrs. Governor, I hope COVID-19 doesn't affect our hearts being isolated from one another. I hope COVID-19 doesn't affect our hearts being isolated from one another. And what that little girl was observing is, I think, how we have come together even while staying apart. How being isolated is harmful and devastating to many people, but we've also come together, whether it's by Zoom or telephone or letter writing, going outside, hiking and skiing and fishing and hunting across the state of Maine and enjoying the outdoors, recreating like people have never done before to this extent. We've come together as we stayed apart, and I think that we've learned not to take each other for granted ever again. Not to take for granted the hug of a grandchild, coffee with a neighbor, a walk with a friend, the job we've always enjoyed for years and years. Never to take that for granted ever again.
Well, Governor Janet Mills, thank you so much for taking time for Maine Calling. And we'll have you back soon, we hope. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris. Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.